Lloyd alcoholic.
Lloyd.
Glad to be here. Glad to be sober. Congratulations, Jake. It's definitely an honor. You know, it's definitely nothing I did. I didn't save your life. That's for sure. It's definitely God, and I can't really explain why you made it back this time. You know, it's the second time Jake's celebrating a year, you know, and since I've been around and I've watched people pick up a year medallion or an anniversary and then something happens and they go back out, chances are they're not coming back, you know what I mean? Like, that ego, that pride, it really, I've watched a lot of people just stay out there because they're just too ashamed to come back and pick up a white chip, and that's my story. You know, I celebrated a year before and went back out, and my biggest thing to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous was like, no way, you know, I'm not coming back, you know, I'm not picking up another white chip in front of those people, you know, and I can't explain it, man, you know. Jake would call me once a month, and when he was out there, and tell me that he can't stop drinking, you know, and he wants to come back to AA, and he just didn't know how, and you know, and I'd be like, yeah, you're alcoholic. You know, that's what we do. We drink, you know. And but I was always open and willing, you know, to try and help him out as much as I could. And one day he called me and he's like, I really need to come back to AA. You know, he's living up in New Hampshire. It's snowing. He's told me he's been sleeping outside for like 3 days in the snow. And it was pretty bad. And I tried to hook him up with like a meeting up there. We called like central office. We found somebody to come get him. And he called me back like 45 minutes later, and he's like, "You know what? I got a slice of pizza, and a room, and a blanket. Never mind." You know what I mean? Like, and I understand that. You know, like, that's alcoholism, man. You know, and you probably had another drink. And but you know, I'm just glad he made it back alive. And you know, he called me a little over a year ago, and he got on a bus and came back, and his life changed. And I think why it did, because he came back and he went out with like 3.5 years sober. And when he came back, you know, and I've seen a lot of people that go out with some time, they come back and they act like they never lost that time, that they still have that time. You know, it's like, no, you lost that time. You know, you just forget everything you thought you knew, you know. And I got to watch Jake do that. He came back and kind of just was, you know, ready to relearn stuff, and you know, got right to work, got into the steps, and you know, his life changed fast. And you know, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's nothing I did, you know. And you know, that's the story. That's my story. But enough about Jake. You know, I'm not feeling too creative. Laura and I were talking before the meeting, and we were saying how, like, I was telling her how nervous I was, and she's like, "You'll be fine. God will show up." And you know, I don't know if that's true, but I'm hoping he gets in here soon, you know, because I'm really scared, you know. And I hate sharing, I hate speaking in meetings, but you know, I hate putting on a tie, but you know, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, so that's what I do. And you know, so I'm not feeling too creative. I'm just going to tell my story. It's the same. It never changes, you know. And but it always starts out the same. And my sobriety date is October 6, 2005. It wasn't my plan to get sober that day, and I'll get to that in a minute. I have a home group. It's this group. I'm active in my home group. I'm the literature chair. I'm responsible for making sure, you know, I try my best to make sure there's big books available and, you know, medallions and chips. And I try to, you know, remember if people are celebrating anniversaries and make sure there's chips here. And kind of just gets me out of myself, you know. And the literature is for free, but books are for sale. And if you need a big book at the end of the meeting, just come up to me and I'll make arrangements to make sure you can get one. You know what I mean? And because somebody gave me a big book when I got here. And that's really where the program's at, in the book, you know. You know, I'm not up here to tell you how good I am or anything like that. Jake didn't ask me to speak to do that. You know, he asked me to speak to tell you how good Alcoholics Anonymous is when worked out of the big book. You know, it's everything it ought to be and more, you know. And but alcoholism runs in my family. My dad's dad was an alcoholic. He hung himself in a mental health facility being treated for alcoholism. My dad lost a brother to this illness. Story is, they were driving from Pittsburgh to Fort Lauderdale spring break, drinking warm beer the whole way down. My dad was driving. He crashed that car. His baby brother flew out the passenger side window, and he watched his baby brother die. on the side of I-95. And he had to go back and tell his mom that he killed her baby son. And I'm pretty sure that screwed my dad up a little bit, you know what I mean? And my dad, growing up, was in and out of jails and institutions, being treated for alcoholism. And, you know, last I heard, which was about 6-7 months ago, he was back in Pittsburgh in a shelter or something like that. And, you know, my dad suffers from other mental illness and stuff, and he just never could really get it together, and alcohol is a big part of that. And I have another uncle that was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous as I was growing up, addicted to heroin. And my sister, you know, this past year has been kind of a mess with her. Her boyfriend went to prison. She went to jail, psych ward. And, you know, like, it just runs in my family. And I don't know if that's why I'm alcoholic or not. My mom's side seemed pretty normal. But, you know, I know my problem is alcoholism. I know I cannot drink safely. And it's based on my experience of trying, like, over and over again, like, trying to just control my drinking. Like, I wished so bad that, like, hopefully one day I'll be able to control and enjoy my drinking like normal people, like it talks about in the Big Book. And I would fail every time, you know. And growing up, I was a pretty normal kid. The only thing I saw wrong with myself was I was pretty skinny, and my name was Lloyd. So I felt like, you know, I was the only Lloyd. Seemed like everybody else was like Steve, John, Chris, like, you know, and I just felt awkward, and I didn't really feel like I fit in. And, you know, so growing up, I was pretty insecure. People would always call me skinny. They'd be like, "You're so skinny." And, you know, my family, you know, my dad was like in and out of jail, and I'm originally from Pittsburgh, and I remember like going to school, and this girl was like, "Your family's fucked up," and I'd just be like, "Whatever," you know, like I was so self-centered, I didn't even care, so that's how I grew up. But you know, I played baseball, you know, I was pretty good at it, you know, for a little while, and you know, and that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. I remember when I was a little kid, you know, people wanted firemen and policemen, and I wanted to play professional baseball. And you know, what ended up happening was my mom had moved my sister and I to South Florida when I was 11. And when I got down here, I just remember like having this deep-rooted resentment at my mom. Like, why'd you move me away from all my friends, you know? And so the first day here, I ran away. I got on my bicycle and I rode like 20 miles up 441 North. I was heading back to Pittsburgh and realized I wasn't going to make it. So when I came back to the house, like everybody was looking for me or whatever. And my mom was like, "Oh my God, where were you?" And I was like, "I ran away. And if you want me to stay, you got to buy me a skateboard." And I started like running this scam on my mom till the day I got sober. You know, if you wouldn't have moved me away from my friends, you know, I wouldn't need $40 right now. You know what I mean? Like, help me out, you know? And I was just a selfish kid, you know, like I didn't care. And, you know, and I hurt my mom the most. And I talk about my mom a lot in my story just because she was the closest one to me, you know? And, I remember the first time I drank, I was 11 years old. We moved to South Florida and, these two guys across the street, Danny and Chris, they asked me to be their friend. And I agreed. And, they wanted me to go fishing with them all the time. And I just felt like these guys, it was the summer going into sixth grade, and I felt like these guys used me. They would have me carry the bait buckets, cast nets, fishing rods, and we'd go fish, and it was unbearable. It was hot. I remember, like, I'd never catch anything. I wouldn't even try. I'd have them bait my hook, and I would just, like, just, you know, screw around and not really do anything. And then it was, like, the last day of summer, and we got up at, like, 6:30 in the morning, and Danny came up to me. He's like, "We're going to drink today before we fish." And I just remember being like, okay. You know, there was, like, no battle in my head. Should I? Shouldn't I drink? I do remember I asked him, who he had never drank before. He was 11, too. And I said, "What happens when you drink?" He's like, "Well, you get this warm feeling inside." And I remember, like, thinking to myself, I want that. You know, I just want to feel different, you know. And so we went to the fishing, where we were fishing was down in the Everglades, and there was this convenience store. It was called the Mexi Mart. And we walked in there, and it was ran by a couple Mexicans. And I went in there, and I grabbed a six-pack of Ice House, and I asked the guy what some good wine. He said MD 2020. So I grabbed a bottle of that, and I walked up to the counter, and I put the booze on the counter, and they sold me the booze, you know, no questions asked. You know, I'm like 11 years old, 90 pounds soaking wet. It was like the coolest thing that ever happened to me up at that point. And we went back to where we were fishing, and we each drank two Ice House, and we started passing the bottle of MD 2020 around. And my experience with the first time I drank, I began to catch fish. And the only reason that The only reason that started happening is because what alcohol did for me. It got me out of myself. You know, I started trying, and you know, I started baiting my own hook, casting my own rod, and I started catching fish. I had like a record day, and you know, we went back to my mom's house. We had like a fish fry, and the first time I drank, I blacked out, threw up, came to in a cold shower, to my sister smacking me across the face, told me I'd been in there for hours. There was puke all around me, and I was really sick, and I slept by the toilet for 24 hours, and I remember laying on the bathroom floor being like, I am never drinking again. Like, I hear a lot of people talk, they have like that similar experience where they get sick the first time they drink, and they think, well, I just got to drink less, or I got to drink something else, and like, I was done drinking, and you know, I wasn't ever going to drink again. And but when I got up off the bathroom floor, and like the pressure of going into sixth grade came like rushing back up to me, I knew I had to drink again. Like, you know, I was like, I just couldn't like talk to people. Talking to people was really hard for me. I'm like so insecure and self-centered. And, you know, but it's hard to get booze when you're 11 years old. So I did what everybody else around me was doing. I became an everyday pot smoker. And I started hustling my mom for $5 a day at lunch. I remember I told her I couldn't eat the school lunch, which was $1.50. And I needed to buy $5 to eat at lunch. And I would save it all week. And I had a couple other friends doing the same scam to their mother. And we'd get together at the end of the week. And we'd put our money together. And we would buy pot. And we'd smoke all week. And 11 years old, you know, smoking weed every day. But anyway, that's just what we did. Because booze was hard to get. If we wanted to drink, there was a ton of neighborhoods in South Florida. So we would, they were all gated, so we'd hop the gate, and if your garage was open and you had a refrigerator in there, we would go in there and we'd steal your, if you had booze in your refrigerator, we'd steal it, and anything else on the way out there was like fishing rods or anything like that, and it'd be like me and my buddies running down the block with booze and fishing rods, and we'd go and drink and fish. And you know, I got in a lot of scrapes in middle school because that's how I was living. You know, I stopped going to school, you know. I don't know how I made it through middle school. Because I rarely ever went. If I didn't have anything to get me loaded, like, I wasn't going to show up. And I wasn't going to go to the bus stop and, like, talk to people. But if I had something to get me loaded, like, I'd be there, you know, first, like, before anybody. And you know, alcohol really changed, really started doing something really for me when I was, like, 15 years old. I went back up to Pittsburgh. My buddies that I grew up with, they were having a house party. And, you know, I'm like 15, I haven't had a girlfriend yet. And my buddy's like, we're going to get you laid tonight. And I just remember being like, no way, dude, I can't even talk to girls. Like, how are we going to do this? He's like, well, you're going to drink. And I was like, all right. I was like, all right, what are we drinking? And he's like, screwdriver. So I'm like, what's that? He's like, it's vodka and OJ. And I was like, cool. You know, I was into OJ at the time. And, you know, and he's poured me this drink. And I started drinking screwdrivers. And I remember waking up in the backseat of a Pontiac Bonneville, pants down to my ankles. I'm throwing up on this girl. I roll out of the car, and it was like a really big house party, and it's cold outside, and the party had moved outside, and you know, my pants are down around my ankles. I'm peeing, puking everywhere, you know, it was just another one of those nights. But and I slept by the toilet for 24 hours again, and when I woke up, my buddy's telling me what had happened the night before. And I remember being like, really? That was me? Like, I was in the back seat of the Bonneville with that girl? Like, really? And, you know, and that's like when alcohol really changed my life. You know, it's from then on, like, I needed to be loaded on a daily basis. I needed to drink and use no matter what. And by the time I'm 17 years old, it's apparent to everybody around me, it's apparent to my mom, myself, that from the moment I get up, before my eyes even open, I need to drink or get loaded, you know what I mean? And it's not really good. I'm a high school dropout, you know? So my mom would, like, go to work, like, 9 to 5, come home, see me, you know, just, like, getting up at, like, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and she would, like, just ask me to, like, unload the dishwasher, and I could never do it. Like, she left a note out for, like, 3 months, like, unload dishwasher, and she would, like, change the date and, like, cross it out every day, and it would never get done. And she would come into my room. There would be, like, booze poured out on the carpet, paraphernalia all over the room, and she would just ask me, like, another simple thing, like, clean your room. And I would be like, shut up, Mom, I'm sick, give me $20, you know? And that was the type of son I was, you know? Like, I was terrible, you know? I wasn't a good son, brother to my sister, you know? and that's how I lived. And my mom kind of was like, she started like doing like research on like rehabs, I guess. And because one day she came home and she's like, we're going to go have family therapy. So me, my sister and I, we jumped in the car and we went up to this facility in Delray Beach, Florida. And remember, we all sat down in there and the therapist came in the room. She looked my mom in the eyes. She's like, what do you want to see done with your son? And then she looked me in the eyes. She's like, I want to see him put inpatient treatment. And I was like, whoa. And I looked around the room. There was like 12 steps, 12 traditions on the wall or whatever. And I kind of realized I was in rehab, I guess. And I remember I like effed everybody in the room. I'm like, I am not an alcoholic. You know, my problems, Oxycontin. I just got to stop doing the dope. And I can drink successfully. And you know, and my mom gave me an ultimatum. She's like, you can live here, you can live on the streets. And, you know, I was pretty smart. You know, I was like, I had nowhere to go, really. So I stayed in rehab, whatever. And I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous there. They would bring meetings in. They would take us to outside meetings. And I just remember thinking, AA is just a bunch of bullshit. You know, like, this is stupid. It seemed like everybody was, like, 40 years older than me. And it would like say things, don't drink even if your ass falls off, and like all this crap. And I just remember being like, you know, this sucks. And I remember going to my therapist and be like, I'm leaving. You know, I turned 18 in that treatment center, and I left that. And she's like, why are you leaving? I'm like, well, I'm gonna go back to school. I'm gonna get a job at Publix, and you know, I'm just gonna get my life together. I get what happens when you drink and do dope and stuff. You come to places like this. I get it, you know. And she's like, you're gonna go drink. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not gonna go drink. I'm gonna go get a job at Publix. I'm gonna go back to school and get my life together. And she's like, you're going to go drink. And I'm like, no way. And so I didn't really have anywhere to go, but I remember I packed my bag and I showed up at my buddy's house. He wasn't there when I got there. He had no idea I was coming. I sat on his porch for like 4 hours. He pulled up. He welcomed me with open arms. He had a case of Heineken. He asked me if I wanted a beer. I said, no, man, I don't drink. And, you know, make a long story short, by the end of the night, I'm drinking. You know, I'm helping him kill the case of Heineken. And what ended up happening there, he ate a bunch of acid. He didn't come out of his room for like 3 days. And, you know, so, like, I'm like, I didn't make it to Publix. I didn't get registered in school. And I'm like, shit, maybe I got to go back to rehab. You know, maybe I can just, you know, get back to my mom's house. And, you know, so I went back to rehab. And I remember they had, like, this meeting on me. They made me sit down in the middle of, like, everybody. And everybody was around me. And they were, like, drilling me with questions and stuff. They're like, what happened when you left here? And I was like, I drank, you know. And they're like, and I was like, it was the best beer I've ever had, you know. And they're like, okay, well, what are you going to do different? And I'm like, man, I guess I'm going to get a I guess I'm going to go to meetings, you know, get a sponsor, work the steps. And the therapist was like, we don't believe you. You know, like, we believe that was the best beer you've ever had, but we don't believe that you're going to actually do anything different. And, you know, I didn't. You know, I left that treatment center, and for the next 4 years of my life, I'm in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my mom had kicked me out. And I'm living in halfway houses, three-quarter way houses all over South Florida. I picked up like 30 white chips from Jacksonville to Miami. I'm sleeping on couches. I can't get sober. I'm in AA a lot of the times wanting to be here, you know. I'm in AA more times not wanting to be here. And, you know, and people would just try and help me out and try and get me plugged in and try and encourage me to get a sponsor and get a home group and stuff like that. And, you know, I just couldn't do it, and I just couldn't get sober. I can't really explain it. I had to go through this, you know, to realize I was an alcoholic, I suppose. And you know, what ended up happening was my mom, when I was living in a halfway house, she moved up to Tampa. And the last year of my drinking, I'd come up here. I came up to Tampa 3 times to detox on my mom's couch, and I would go back down to South Florida to try and control my drinking. And the one time I came up here, I detoxed, and then my buddy called me, said his uncle had renovated his uncle had bought a hotel, and I can come help renovate it, make some money. And he had some stuff that put me on the couch for the past week. And so I went. I was like, sure. I went down there, I helped renovate this hotel. We worked all week, and then at the end of the week, we went out to Wing House and we started drinking. And blackouts for me were rare. You know, towards the end it kind of happened more consistently, but you know, I can piece together you know, it's more like brownouts where I can, like, piece the night together. And this is the last time I drank. And, you know, I remember we were drinking and we wanted to go play cards. So we had to go, this was Kissimmee, so we're like, all right, we'll go back to the Hard Rock. I remember being at the Hard Rock Casino playing cards, drinking some more. And then I remember waking up in the passenger seat of my car. We were about to rear end a car. Speedometer said 120. I looked at the person that was driving my car. He was sleeping. So I woke him up, and he spun the car doing 120 on the side of I-4, and there was, like, it happened in, like, slow motion. There was, like, cars all around me. I remember there was, like, a semi-truck. The horn was, like, barreling down, and we just spun out on the side of I-4, and I jumped out, and he jumped out, and he came around to the front of the car, and he handed me my keys, and he said, "You were driving." And I just remember being like, "No way, dude, I was not driving. You know, I'm not getting this DUI or whatever, you know." And but in Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear a lot of people talk about, like, having a moment of clarity, you know. And I remember standing on the side of I-4, like, thinking about all the halfway houses that I used to live in and watching people come into Alcoholics Anonymous, watching people literally, I had a roommate literally crawl in, like, up the stairs and, like, pass out on his bed for, like, 3 days. And then it'd be, like, a couple days later at, like, 8:30 p.m., he's, like, rushing out the door, and I'd be like, "Where are you going, man?" He'd be like, "To an AA meeting." And then it'd be, like, a couple days, it'd be, like, a week or two later, and he would be sitting on the coffee table, like, writing stuff out with the big book open. I'd ask him what he's doing. He'd be like, "Step work." And I'd be like, "That's stupid, you know." And then it'd be, like, maybe, like, a month later, and he'd be running out the door at 6:30 a.m., and I'd be like, "Where are you going, man?" He'd be like, "To work. What are you doing today?" You know what I mean? And I just couldn't. Living was just so hard. I didn't know how to, like, interact with people or be social, and I couldn't get a job. I was unemployed and unemployable, you know, like, nobody wanted to hire me. And I tried to get jobs and I couldn't, you know. And so I'm standing on the side of I-4. I'm like, man, I think to myself, I'm like, if I want to live any sort of normal life, I need to go back to AA. And I didn't go back the very next day, but what ended up happening, I made it back to my mom's couch. I detoxed again. I woke up. The last week, I'm like, I'm waking up in the middle of the night, paralyzed from the waist down. Like, I have this sharp pain in my lower back. I got to, like, flip my legs over to get the blood flowing through them, and I'm not sleeping. So I started praying for a good night's sleep. And I woke up on October 5th, 2005. At, like, noon, and I did how I start my day. Most people, like, grab a cup of coffee. I'd go and lay on the bathroom floor because, whatever reason, that, like, helped my back or whatever. And I'm laying there on the bathroom floor. My cell phone rings. I pick it up. It's the only person I know in Tampa. His name's Scully. And I start making a drug deal over the phone in the living room of my mom's house. And she works 9 to 5, right? And I'm standing in the living room, and I'm just, you know, making this drug deal over the phone. And my mom comes down the stairs at noon on a work day, and she looks me in the eyes. She says, "Don't do it," you know? And here's my mom again for the 100th time looking me in the eyes, telling me not to do it. The disappointment, you know. And I didn't tell you guys about the time I stole a ring from her, pawned it for $50 for her just to come to me and ask me what happened to her $5,000 ring the next day. I didn't tell you about the time I stole a car, totaled it in the neighborhood, pushed it on the driveway for her to come find her car undriveable the next day on her way to work and have to walk 3 miles to work. I didn't tell you the time I stole so much money out of her checking account, her mortgage payment bounced, you know. And here my mom is again standing in front of me like, "You, I don't know what to do with you. I can't help you. You have to leave." And you know, and so I said, "I got to go. I'm alcoholic. I got to go to AA, you know, just get off my back," because I had played that on my mom so many times up to that point. And she's like, "Call now." And she busted out the yellow pages. And I found AA, and I called. And Tim over at central office picked up. I'm like, "Hey, Tim, my name's Lloyd. I'm visiting from South Florida. I have 3 years sober, and I need a meeting." And I snuck out the side of the house. I snuck out the back door, and I'm talking to Tim about this AA meeting. I meet Scully at the pool, and I go back in, and I tell my mom, "All right, there's a 5:45 at Club 33 or whatever." I tell her about the meeting, and she's like, "Thank God, you know, you go to that meeting." And she went off to work, and I had breakfast. It was 10 Vicodin, and I was going to go up to grab 2 quarts at the gas station, because that's what we do. We drink. We're alcoholic. And for whatever reason, I passed out on the couch, and I woke up at like 5 o'clock. And I was like, "Wow, that's weird," you know. And so I loaded up all my clothes in my car. I had, and I was like, "I'm going to go check out this AA meeting. Hopefully I find a girl that falls in love with me and wants to take care of me the rest of my life." And that was my motives for going to the that meeting that day. And I remember telling my sponsor about that later on when I was sober. And he said, "I don't think God cares what your motives are, as long as you're either doing right or you're not." And I was doing the right thing by going to a meeting. And I remember I pulled up to this meeting. I'd fixed a flat in 3 tires. I was on a donut. I had no bumper on my car. And I walked into this meeting, and I sit down. I put my head against the wall, and I'm like, "Man, I'm back in AA at 21. This sucks. Nobody's getting sober at 21. And You know, I remember it was like 5:45, 5:50 came around, the chairperson didn't show up, and the guy that was sitting at the table, he got off. He's like, I'll chair the meeting, let's have a meeting. And he went around and started chairing the meeting. I remember I shared in that meeting how I had two friends left. One lived in Daytona and one lived in Orlando. And this is exactly why they were my friends. They were hundreds of miles away from me. Couldn't burn bridges with them. And because I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, they just leave. You know, they don't come back. They don't want to have any contact with me. And I'd like to tell you, at the end of the meeting, like, everybody came up to me and stuck their hand out to me and told me I never had a drink and everything was going to be all right. It's not my experience, but somewhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned to thank the chairperson at the end of the meeting. So I went up to the chairperson, like, hey, man, I'm Lloyd. Thanks for your service. He's like, hey, man, I'm Mike. What are you doing here? I said, hey, man, I don't know. He's like, hey, man, I can tell. And, it immediately started pouring out at me, like, I'm alcoholic, you know, I don't know how to live, and I'm going to die, you know, and I just can't get sober, and I've been coming to AA all these times, and I don't know what to do. And he knew exactly what to do with me. This guy wasn't even supposed to be chairing the meeting that day, but he took some time out of his life and took me across the street to La Terracita. He split a Cuban sandwich with me, and he bought me a cafe con leche, and it was the first time I ever had a cafe con leche. But anyways, and he started explaining alcoholism to me. He started to tell me that he wasn't going to be able to help me. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you're going to have to find a higher power. And I'm like, well, how do I do that? You know, what do I got to do? And he's like, well, first, you got to be alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous has nothing to offer you unless you're alcoholic. And I'm like, I'm bad, you know, I'm bad alcoholic, man. I can't drink safely, you know. And he's like, all right, when you go home tonight, I want you, instead of robbing your mom and going back down to South Florida like I wanted to do, he's like, I want you to go home and pray and ask God to help you stay alive, help you get to the noon meeting the next day. And I remember thinking, like, really? Like, that's going to help me out? Like, I need some money. Like, help me out. Give me some money, man. Like, you know, I want to go home, rob my mom, go back down to South Florida. That's, like, what I really want to do. And he's like, just go home and do that. Say that prayer. And for whatever reason, I went home. I said, God, help me stay alive. Help me stay sober and help me make it to the noon meeting the next day. And I woke up the next day and I went to Club 3333 again at the noon. And I made it to that meeting, and I'm grateful for that meeting. There's hundreds of years of sobriety in that meeting. It's a big book study, and what they do is they read a little bit out of the big book, and then they share their experience. And that's where I started relating to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They were in the chapter of Vision for You, and it talked about how we drank for release of care, worry, and boredom. And that's what we find here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and they introduced me to, and I detoxed in that noon meeting, and you know, this is my message. Like, I got right into the big book, you know, I got a sponsor. And that's really the day my life changed, when I asked another man to be my sponsor. And he knew exactly what to do with me. He had me read some things out of the big book, and then we sat down and read them together. And when we came to a step, we worked it. And we said the third step in his living room. And he showed me how to write out an inventory. And he said, start now. And I went on his patio and I wrote out, as honest as I could, inventory in 4 hours on his patio. And he went out of town for a week. And I remember when he got back, we were going to do my fifth step. And that week I was crazy. You know, I thought about drinking every single day. I thought about killing myself. I thought about my ex-girlfriend, who I was so resentful at because she dumped me because I drank too much and she was a cocktail waitress in a strip club. And I would stalk her and watch her drink more than me. You know what I mean? So that's what I came here with, this just resentment, you know, I was angry. And, you know, I didn't think I was going to make it, you know. And my sponsor came back from, I guess he went on vacation or whatever, and at 24 days sober, he took me up to Ballast Point, and I did a fifth step with him. And my freshman year in rehab, my therapist told me I was selfish, self-centered, egotistical, grandiose mother effer. Told me the booze isn't working for me, and I didn't really know what that meant at the time. And it stung, though. But that's what came off on my inventory. Like, I saw how self-centered I was, and I got to see my part and my resentments and everything like that. And then my sponsor showed me how to do 6 and 7, and this is my experience. Like, working the steps, my life changed. You know, doors started opening up, and I got a job I totally didn't deserve. Somebody had a sober house. It was a bunch of guys that are members of this group, and somebody had moved back up north and had the opportunity to move in there and live with sober people, and you know, they would leave their meditation books by the toilet. So I started reading meditation books on the toilet and just like stuff like that. And I started getting sober and my life started changing, you know. And I started making money and I started, I wrote out as honest as I could 8-step. And I owed everybody and my mother money when I got here. And I started making these amends financially. And I remember when I got my first checking account in sobriety. Another guy that is a member of this group, a good friend, he was a personal banker at a bank. And I remember I went to see him for a checking account. And he's like, well, you got to pay back couple of these banks first before I give you a checking account. And I remember I started paying back these banks, and I went back there and I showed him, you know, like, look what I did. And he gave me my first checking account, you know, and just little stuff like that. I started putting my life back together, you know, because God was working through my life. And I remember I learned how to start paying bills. I remember they came every month, and Mike would be like, all right, it's time to pay bills again. I'm like, you sure? Like, can't we? Like, wait till next month or something? Like, because that's what I would do. Like, I would just pay him whenever, you know, like, whenever I could. And, you know, I just learned how to be mature and do stuff like that. And it was people in AA showed me how to live. And, you know, somebody showed me how to tie a tie in AA, you know. Like, I didn't know how to do that before I got sober. And, you know, it was right around, and my life got better. And opportunities just keep getting better. And you know, you stay sober, you get stuff back. And that happened for me, you know, for sure. Right around like 5 years sober, you know, my life was going pretty good. Yeah, I guess I convinced some girl to get engaged with me. You know, I helped my buddy take a company from a closet to, you know, a big room, and rolled millions of dollars of fees for his company. And you know, and I bought my first car. Like, a bank gave me a loan for a car, and I feel like I'm doing really good at 5 years sober. And I start looking around my life, and I'm like, I am awesome, you know. And I start taking credit for all these blessings that are happening in my life. And you know, within a couple months, that girl left me. She dumped me with a letter, and you know, I'm in the Dear John Club, and that hurt. And you know, and then that. And then that I left that job I worked at because I got resentful that he wasn't paying me enough. And I started my own company, and he found out, and he sued me, and because I had a no-compete there. And then that car I bought got rear-ended in a hit-and-run. The Steelers lost the Super Bowl. Like, it was just like this three-month period of all this stuff. And the only thing I knew how to do was come to you guys. You know what I mean? Like, things got dicey, and I was scared, you know. And I was really scared I was going to drink, and I didn't want to, you know. And I had to just get back to, because during this time, as I'm trying to arrange everything, I start going to less meetings, you know what I mean? Like, it just becomes less important. And I, you know, I'm like, I'm not sponsoring people, and I'm doing these things that I'm not doing what I did to help me get sober. And I put things in front of my sobriety, and they all got taken away. You know what I mean? And so, like, this last year has been, you know, trying to just like get back on the beam and do, you know, just be one among many, I guess, you know, and try not to separate myself from everybody else. My sponsor tells me if I want to be closer to God, I get closer to you guys. God's in between you and I. And, you know, and I just try to do that. And it was right around 5 years sober. Every year I bring my mom my medallion every year on my anniversary. And it was on my fifth year. I went over there, and it's cool because I get a card and I hand her my medallion, and I say, thank you for helping me get sober. And it's funny because she, like, it happens every year, and she's always like shocked when I bring her a card. She's like, what's the special occasion? And then she opens it up, and it's, thank you for helping me get sober, you know. And you know, and then her eyes just ball up in water, and then my eyes ball up in water, and we like hug it out and stuff, you know. It's really cool experience, you know. It's like a spiritual experience, you know, of like, it's just gratitude for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I got talking to her that day, and she told me that when I was out there using, that she never stopped praying for me. You know what I mean? Like, she never stopped praying that one day I find recovery, you know. And I know why I'm standing here today, Thursday night, you know, in Tampa YPG speaking at a little over 6 years sober. It's an answer to a prayer. And it wasn't even my prayer, you know. So it's like, I want to thank my mom. And, you know, and... you know, but Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and, you know, and I try to, prayers, you know, helps a lot. And I remember when Jake was out there, you know, I whenever we'd have, like, the moment of silence, I think I would, you know, try and be conscious of Jake. Hopefully he would get sober, you know. So maybe it's an answer to a prayer that he got sober too, you know. I'm sure it is somebody's prayer. And, you know, and if you're new, you think Alcoholics Anonymous is just a bunch of bull, you know, stick around, you know, like put something into it, because the more you put into it, the bigger your life gets, you know. And I've seen things here you can't see anywhere else, you know. Lives change here and relationships are brought back together, you know. Like, no matter how far down the scale we've gone, like, or whoever's life you feel like you destroyed or you can't get back together, like, they get, relationships are repaired here. Like, I never thought I could be a son to my mother again, you know. And but that's just like a gift of the program, you know. And you know, and every so often, like, I'm just so grateful for AA. Like, every so often, I'll just, it happened to me the other day. I was just driving to work over the bridge. It was a sunny day. And, you know, I just overcame with joy. You know, like, my eyes watered up. And, you know, I wasn't happy before I got sober at all, ever, you know. And it's just a cool thing, you know, that I can, that can happen to a drunk like me, I guess, you know. And, thanks. That's it.